There are more than 3,200 parents of dependent children in prison in Iowa today. There are still more offenders whose children grew up while dad or mom was behind bars. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. When a parent is sent to prison, the lives of his or her children are changed forever.
One of my 10-year-olds, she tried to do everything bad, so, you know, because she wanted mommy to come home, and she thought if she was bad enough, they would have to let mommy come home.
This hour, we continue our series on corrections in Iowa with a look at parents in prison. We'll talk about how that puts children at risk, maintaining and creating healthy bonds, and breaking the cycle of incarceration. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we continue our series on Iowa's correctional system. This hour, parents in prison. There are just over 8,000 people in prison in Iowa right now. 3,259 of those offenders have children who are under the age of 18. We'll talk about how having a parent in prison puts kids at risk. I'll talk with people who are working to provide support and break the cycle of incarceration. We'll find out what the Department of Corrections is doing to help inmates maintain their family ties and learn to be better parents while they're behind bars. Let's start the hour with the story of one mom in prison. Judy has spent 35 years in prison. She was incarcerated first in Rockwell City, but now lives at the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women in Mitchellville, and that's where I spoke with her and asked her about her kids.
I have five children. When I came to prison, my baby was a month old, and my oldest was 15. And so it was been very hard on all of them, actually.
I'm sure.
But my 15-year-old, you know, because she's going through her teenage years, and it was very difficult, and they tend to try and do other things to, you know, my 10-year-olds, she tried to do everything bad, so, you know, because she wanted mommy to come home, and she thought if she was bad enough, they would have to let mommy come home. And of course, I had to tell her that she can't do that because the mommy couldn't see her, and that mommy couldn't come home until they let mom come home, so. It was very difficult, but I called them all the time, and my their father would bring them up. When I was in Rockwell, they brought them up once a month because it's so far away. And then when we moved down here, they came more often. And then we had more phone calls, and now due to technology, we have wonderful email. And so we can email back and forth all the time. And so I pretty much just raised them in here, and they were with their father, and their father took care of them. And they just, it's been very hard on them.
How many phone calls could you make at the start?
We could only have 2 15-minute phone calls a week. And then when we moved down here, we could have as many phone calls as we wanted. So it was really quite the switch and really a wonderful thing, you know, so you could. And then when we first moved down, we had, we called collect. And then eventually we had to start paying for our own phone calls, which they still pay for because they send money so you can put money on your phone to pay for your phone calls. So it's all, but it's just that way they, when you call, then they don't have to accept for, or before, I think sometimes people would call and people didn't want to accept it, but they, you know, would accept the phone call, and then it just got to be too much. So they always have to change things a little bit, you know, and work it out for everyone so it works out.
Now, of course, being in prison, I know you couldn't do all the things that you wanted to do for your kids. What was most important to you in maintaining those relationships? What did you want them to know?
I just wanted them to know that, you know, I loved them very, very much, even though mommy made some bad choices, that maybe they could learn from that and not make those same choices, and that that I just loved them unconditionally. And, you know, we were as they were teenagers growing, we were very close. And so they, you know, they would ask me advice, you know. And like my son, he was like, he wanted to be a virgin when he got married. And so he's like, Mom, what do I do? What do I do? I was like, well, so then I started him running. Now he runs marathons, you know, every year. And now it's in honor of his father because his father has passed away. But, you know, they're great kids. And I have 9 grandchildren.
Wow.
And they age from 5 to 21. And so, yeah, that's awesome.
In those early years, did the corrections department do anything to try to help you maintain those relationships?
Well, when I first went to prison, we used to be able to have one-day staff escorted furloughs. That's what they called them. And so we were able to go off grounds with a staff escort and take our children with us. You know, I mean, meet our children there so we could have some contact with our children outside of here. And then we also had, like, unlimited visiting. They could visit every day. If they could be there, they could visit every day. And they visited from early morning till night. And there was a lot fewer women then. Now there's so many more women, you know, it has to be changed. And you don't get that much visiting, but you still get a lot of visiting.
I can't even begin to imagine the fears that must have been going through your head when you first went to prison and your kids were so young. But when you think back to those thoughts and then think of the relationships that you have with your kids and your grandkids now, how does the reality match with what you thought would be?
Well, actually, I think I have a better relationship with my children. Well, I don't know better, but I have a lot better bond and relationship with my children, even though I'm away from them, than I've seen a lot of people have that are with them every day. So I'm just thank God that I'm allowed to continue that relationship because I've stayed connected. I've through the years, you know, we're allowed to have crafts and stuff. I've made them things. I've sent them things. You know, so they know that I care and that I do things for them. And even though I'm gone, I can still, you know, be a part of their life. You know, I don't get to see the big events and stuff, but I can still be a small part of their life.
What has that meant to you on a daily basis in prison? Because I can imagine there are days that are hard to get through.
Yeah, I just live for my kids. They keep me going. I needed to lose some weight, and I was like, well, I better lose this weight because before the youngest was born, I was like, I'm never going to be able to keep up with her. So it's an incentive too to try and stay healthy for the children so that I'll be there when they grow up too.
How often do you get to see them?
Well, I probably see them. It just depends which ones. Some, like my baby, I haven't seen her for a year because she's like out of state. And then they moved. And so it's just been that I haven't got to see her. And then some of them I see like usually once a month. Some of them I see like every 2 or 3 months. And then we had a family day, so then they came up for that. And so it just depends now because they're getting older and they just, you know, have activities. They're, you know, the sports and stuff. So I just have to write and talk to them. It just changes, you know. You still have that bond with them, but it just changes because they have a lot more involved, and you don't want them to stop their life because I'm here, and, you know, after all, you should be here with me, you know, come here with me. They need to keep their life going and know that I love them unconditionally and that I'll always be there for them, you know, whether I'm there physically or I will always be there mentally with them.
Are there young moms in here that you give advice to?
Yes. Some of them think, you know, when their children go that they will never get to see their children again. I said, don't ever, ever give up hope because even if they do take your children, those children, and it's came true for different women, and they's like, you told me, Judy, they would always come back, and they will. They will come back to their mother. They will come back and have a connection, and I've seen it, and it's awesome. You know, the dad has taken them away or something, but they still come back and see their mom. And so it gives them hope, you know.
That's Judy, a mother of five, grandmother of nine. She's been in prison for 35 years. I spoke to her at the Iowa Correctional Institution for Women in Mitchellville. And with me now is Deborah Schroeder. She is social work supervisor at the Iowa Department of Human Services. She supervises the counselors that work with parents who are in prison. Hello, Deborah.
Hi there. Thanks for having me this morning.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And give us an idea of what some of the big risks are for kids whose parents, mom or dad, go to prison.
We have seen throughout the years that the risks are for the parents that are not available, that are incarcerated, that they tend, kind of like Judy said, they tend to act out more. They do think that. They think that if they act out more, the worse they are, that they can come home, or that they can, they won't be able to see their mom as often, but or dad. But they think that just acting out would help them be able to see their parent more. So we've seen that, and I guess a risk would be that they, I think that they don't feel like their mom or dad, they will follow in their mom or dad's footsteps is one of the concerns that we obviously see and we try to help with.
There are people listening right now who probably think, well, if a mom or a dad is a criminal, maybe a child not having contact with them is a good thing. Why is it important, for the most part, for kids to maintain ties with their parents, even if they are in prison?
We really strongly believe in the department and also the Department of Corrections that family connection is most important. For that parent to know that that child is doing okay, whether when they're incarcerated and whether that child is at home or that child is in placement, just to make sure that they're okay. And for also for the bond, like Judy talked about, that specifically is to have that continuous bond. As she stated, she's not able to see them daily, but she has contact with them through letters, through phone calls, and that's really what a child needs to hear is that, you know, my parent is still there, my parent still cares, and for the parent to continue to move on, as Judy stated, every day she lives for her kids, and that's the bond that needs to continue to happen. And we try to assist that any way we can.
Well, we are going to take a short break, and we're going to come back, and we'll talk about what the Department of Corrections does to help parents and children maintain those bonds when a parent is in prison. We'll also talk about programs that you help facilitate, Deborah, that teach people who are in prison to be better parents while they're there and when they get out. I'm talking right now with Deborah Schroeder. She is social work supervisor at the Iowa Department of Human Services, and we'll continue our conversation in a few minutes. Also, you can share your story. Send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me is Deborah Schroeder. She is social work supervisor at the Iowa Department of Human Services. She supervises counselors that work with parents who are in prison. And that's the focus of our hour today, parents in prison. As we go on, we will hear the voices of some parents who are in prison. And we'll also talk about what the Department of Corrections does and can do to help parents and children maintain bonds. Later in the hour, we'll also hear from families who have been affected by this, people who are on the outside who have loved ones or exes in prison as well. Deborah, what can the Department of Corrections do to help parents maintain bonds with their children? I understand that with different security levels, there are different rights that people do and do not have, but what are some of the ways?
Right. I think some of the most important ways are as they continue to encourage them to write their loved ones. I believe the department does a very good job in regards to helping them. If they're not on their visiting list, you know, what can you do to get them on the visiting list? Obviously, as you stated, there are restrictions and policies that need to be followed. They also encourage family days. They have those, as it was talked about before. And just any kind of classes or anything that they can bring in, the Department of Corrections is always looking at what else can we do for our parents.
What are some of the programs that are facilitated to help people learn about being parents?
One of the parenting programs that the Department of Human Services and the Department of Corrections have collaborated with is called 24/7 Dads. And we've brought that to the Mount Pleasant Prison to help dads just really reconnect. A lot of these guys are saying, I don't know how to be a dad. I don't know how to even start when I get out to be a dad to my children because I've been gone so long. And so it's that reconnection. It's also talking about parenting skills. What do I need? How do I deal with the mother of my child that I haven't had a good relationship with? And it's really giving them that power to come back out and reconnect with their family.
Can you give me an example of 24/7 dads? So some of the things that people are taught that might surprise us.
They're actually taught communication skills. Some of these guys will be honest with us and say, we have no idea what you're talking about in regards to good communication skills. Respect. The resources, they don't know, they say they don't know how to reach out for resources. We talk about the resources to fathers. What is available to them in that community where they return to? We provide that to them. We also talk about discipline. One of the things that I said in a session, and a gentleman stated that if my child cries, I tell him that's not okay. And so the whole group, it's a really powerful thing because the whole group almost teaches it. It wasn't just the instructor saying, well, that's not okay, or why did you think that was okay for your child not to cry? And he was able to process that through his peers and through the instructors to say, okay, I get it. I get that, you know, our children have feelings and the reason that they have feelings. So that was, a very powerful situation to watch.
And you even teach them social skills, for example, how to behave when they're at a sporting event for their child.
Right. Again, when we talk about respect and the community, how is the community going to embrace you? You want to show the community, you know, I've learned my lesson. I made some very poor choices. But you know what? Number one, and after that, I'm still a dad. I'm still a parent.
We're going to hear a little bit from a father who is in prison here. Iowa Public Radio's Sarah McCammon visited the Mount Pleasant Correctional Facility. She spoke with one of the fathers who has been involved in a program that we'll talk more about in a moment called Parents as Partners. The father's name is Jay. He's 33 years old, and he's been in prison for 4 years. He'll be released in September of this year.
You have two kids?
Yeah, I have two daughters.
Do you get to see them as part of that?
No, I haven't seen them since I've been here, you know. I have a minor for a victim, and this place has a policy that if you have a minor for a victim, then you can't be around any minors or have contact with any minors until you complete treatment. Well, my big question when I first got here was, when am I going to start treatment? And that's kind of a long process that I still it's hard for a lot of people to to sink in. You know, they don't get you in treatment until you're within 18 months of discharge. So, and with that being said, you can't see your kids, but and then you sign a contract before you start treatment saying that, you know, you can't see your kids or have any contact with them until you get done with treatment. So it's been a struggle, but I tell you what, I keep my girls on my shoulder, and they've helped me, you know, they've helped me out a lot. You know, I've stopped myself from, you know, a lot of situations, you know, just thinking about them, putting them first, and just can't wait to get back to them.
But you can't have any kind of a relationship right now.
Not right now. Not till I complete treatment, and I'm right there at the end. We just got a little bit going left, and I'm just kind of trying to be patient, and, you know.
They're young, I assume, small.
Yeah, my oldest just turned 12, you know, my youngest is 10, so... Yeah, you know, I've been away for almost 5 years, so I've got some catching up to do. You know, I don't want to try to cover 5 years in 1 week, you know. It's going to take a little time, but, you know, I'm willing to do the process, you know. That's why I'm blessed to get hooked up with the parent partners, you know, because I'm going to continue to do that on the streets, you know. I'm going to continue to be involved with the DHS, so... You know, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, you know, and that's what they're there for. They're there to help you and guide you and, you know, in any way you need help with. So, you know, I'm going to use that. That's one thing I learned in group, you know. You got to ask for it, you know. Sometimes you ain't got no choice, but you got to ask.
So is it mostly group? sessions then, like group parenting classes?
Yeah, and, you know, there's also, you know, you could put a kite in to Deb Schroeder, I believe, you know, and she'll work with you in your own individual case, you know, if you're involved with DHS and if you've been in, have your kids took in and that sort of thing, you know, so they'll work with you, kind of give you an update on how your kids are doing and the proper, you know, proper ways to go about, you know, handling, you know, staying involved. I mean, because that's like the biggest thing with parent partners, you know, is staying involved, staying connected with your kids and doing the right thing, because, you know, there's so many fathers that are setting bad examples, you know, and so they kind of teach you ways to set good examples.
And that's something you chose voluntarily?
Yeah.
What made you decide to do that?
You know, in group, I've learned that, you know, I always consider myself, you know, I'm a good father, and I am, don't get me wrong, but just to kind of better my father skills, you know, staying sharp, stuff like that, and then I've got a lot of insight from group alone.
Do you think they understand why you're not around?
I'm going to leave that up to me and my communication, you know, when I get out there, you know, regardless of what they've heard, you know, this and that, you know. I used to have a pretty good connection with them, you know. They were always daddy's girls, you know, so can't wait to kind of get back to that. And they have a right to know, you know, and I will, you know, explain it to them, you know, when I feel the time is right, you know, kind of give them a little insight on the direction I took in my life, and hopefully that'll kind of keep them out of a rough situation, you know, as they get older.
That's Jay. He's an offender being held at the Mount Pleasant Correctional Facility. He spoke with Iowa Public Radio's Sarah McCammon when she was there doing reporting about sex offenders in prison. And Deborah Schroeder is here with me, social work supervisor at the Iowa Department of Human Services. Jay mentioned your work, Deborah, with the group and with the program Parents as Partners. And clearly here's a situation where here's a dad with a lot of challenges to overcome if he wants to be a positive part of his children's lives when he gets out of prison. What do you teach in Parents as Partners?
Parents as Partners is a program statewide that our parents that actually have graduated the Department of Human Services system, whether they've had their rights terminated or they've successfully had their children returned back to them. These Parents Partners are teaching these offenders in prison how do you get it right? How does it look like? They've been there. They're the ones that have gone through this. They've been in the trenches, so they know. These are our actual teachers. These are the ones that are providing these programs, are the instructors for these programs, because they've been there. So the offenders look at them like, hey, you've been there, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. We give the guidance through the department to say, you know, here's the format and here's how we'd like to lay it out, but the parent partners are the ones that go forward and bring that to these guys. And these guys have embraced them. They want to be, when they get out, they want to continue this program on the street. They want to be those parent partners. So they're the ones that are teaching this life lesson of, hey, you know, bad choices, but here's what you can do to pull yourself up.
Another one of the ways that the Iowa Department of Corrections facilitates the relationships between parents and their kids is through a reading program. In Mitchellville, it's called the Storybook Program. It's also available in other prison institutions throughout the state of Iowa. It's an opportunity for moms, dads, and even grandparents to read to the children in their lives. The inmate gets to choose a book and read it into a recording device. Then the recording and a copy of the book are sent to the child. Inmates can choose to read a book a month, but only to kids who are under the age of 18. Ben Kiefer, host of River to River, visited the Iowa Medical and Classification Center in Oakdale. He talked with an inmate who reads to his daughter. She was 5 years old when he went to prison, and now she's 10. He can't read to his son because he's over 18 years old. This inmate is serving a 25-year sentence.
I think that it's probably the best gift I've been able to do is being able to read to him. So, because when I actually read to her, in my mind, it's my time I get to escape, and I'm thinking about that I am sitting there reading with her. And those things I took for granted, and what I would give for that now. So, mm-hmm. It kind of takes me away when I do get to read to her. So, and then to hear her explain to me after she gets it, you know, how she loves it, and, you know, she just cherishes them, I guess. So, I mean, her mom tells me that, you know, that she saves every one, and she's got it cataloged. Everything I send her, she always just keeps and just, yeah, it gets hard to get her to part with it, I guess. So,
are there rules that you have to follow? For instance, just sticking to the reading, or can you do a little commentary between
the
lines?
Well, you know, I don't think anybody, it's such a wonderful program, I don't think anybody pushes the boundaries, but, you know, a little introduction in the beginning has never been frowned upon about, you know, telling her that, you know, here's another book, the title, read the author, and then speak a few sentences I usually do about, you know, how much I miss her and how much I enjoy sitting there, and I would love to be sitting there reading with her, and hope she enjoys the book. So, and then I, you know, close it with the same, you know, reminding her that, you know, I love her and that I miss her and stuff. So,
and in what form is her feedback? Does she write you, or do you?
She writes. She draws me pictures. I've read a book to her, and then you know, I spoke to her, and that's where I've seen the feedback from her, which is a very sweet thing. One time there was about a motorcycle, and I mentioned to her about how it'd be fun to have a motorcycle with a sidecar, and she would be able to ride in the sidecar, and so that was kind of spinning off the book. And I got a letter probably within the next month, and it was a picture that she had drawn concerning a motorcycle with a sidecar. She embellished with, you know, there's a trailer behind it, it had camping gear in it and a cover over it, she said, to keep her dry. So it was one of them things that was worth $1 million to me. So,
how has this changed your relationship?
It's changed it because it's been able to, I guess, reestablish the basics that I never had before I came in here.
Basics such as?
Take the time to listen to your children and take the time to share things with them that will be monumental in their life for many years. Reading what little book, it can be a book or it can be the Bible. I mean, just taking the time to read with your child and listening to them, I think, is something that a lot of us take for granted in this busy world. I, for one, being one of the most guilty of that.
Mm-hmm. So when you were outside before you were here, you looked at life differently?
I was too busy. You know, I had...
What were your priorities?
Career, and I owned two businesses, and my job was to put money in the checking account. I mean, and that's... And I felt that as long as I provided those things that I didn't have as a child, that I was doing what was required of me as a father. And it's a little wake-up call coming in here, learning differently.
How would you do it differently now?
Well, number one, I'd set aside time every day just that time where you got to shut everything off, the cell phone, the laptop, each individual relationship needs its own time, and I think the ones that we neglect the most are the ones we have with our children. And then the next thing we know, they're 18 and it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
So,
will there be a time when you'll be able to read to your children again?
I pray to God that I will be able to, yes, in person.
In person.
In person, yes. Yep.
What do you imagine that scene would be like?
I don't know. You've got to, it's hard to relate, you know, losing a lot of things and then being rewarded with just life. I must say it would be greater than anything you could experience. It's like being celebrating the birth of your child again, but understanding what it means.
So you were the owner of a business. You had money to afford things.
I had everything.
You had everything.
I had everything. Yeah.
And compared to being able to read to your child in person?
They can keep it all. I just want to read to my kid. I just want to read to both my children, you know, but... yeah, I don't want any of that back. I want to be with my kids.
That was an inmate at the Iowa Medical and Classification Center in Oakdale talking with River to River host Ben Kiefer. Deborah, we're nearly out of time, but there are people, of course, like this inmate who already have a relationship with their children before they go to prison. There are also inmates who become parents when they're in prison. That must create some special challenges as far as creating a bond and maintaining a bond.
Yes, it does. And I would just continue to encourage those parents to do what you can to write, even though if there's not a relationship with the mother or father of the child that's at home, continue to write or send what you can out to say, hey, I'm still here, even though I'm not with you physically, I'm here and I want to be involved in whatever I can do. And I think as the Department of Corrections continues to grow, they will continue to embrace, you know, these are still parents and they need to be a part of their kids' lives.
Children of people who go to prison are at risk for committing crimes as they grow. There is this cycle of incarceration. Do you think maintaining these bonds is an important key to breaking that cycle?
Right, I do. I really do. I think that if kids see that, hey, parents can say, I've made a poor mistake or a bad choice, and I'm paying for it now, but this life I don't want to see for you. I don't want you to be in here and have to do the same struggles that I do. I want you to be a successful parent, and I think that with the continuous involvement, I think that can be possible.
Deborah Schroeder, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Deborah Schroeder is social work supervisor at the Iowa Department of Human Services. She supervises counselors that work with parents who are in prison. And coming up in a few minutes, we're going to talk with families who have been affected by this in many ways, who are on the outside with parents of their children in prison. That's coming up in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're focusing on parents in prison. And now we're going to talk about the people who are left behind when those parents go to prison. Joy DeSomber is one of the founders of a nonprofit called Empowering Children of Incarcerated Parents. This organization grew out of her personal experience. Her ex-husband, the stepfather of two of her kids and the biological father of one of her kids, murdered his employer in California and was sent to prison. She and her children moved back to her home state of Iowa. Hello, Joy.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
When your ex-husband committed his crime and you and your family were thrust into the correction system, I can imagine there were many, many, many challenges that you faced. But what were your fears for your kids?
We were a well-to-do, well-educated family, and I had no idea that this could ever affect us. So, of course, I was uneducated. I didn't know anything about what to do for my children, and the emotional upheaval for them, the roller coaster was unimaginable. I couldn't put my own mind around it. I had my own emotional issues to deal with, and I certainly am not a professional, so I didn't know how to deal with my children's complex emotional state. I mean, they missed this person, they loved this person, and all of a sudden they also had to deal with the fact that he had committed such a horrific crime. And for me, it was dealing with, is it okay for them to still love him? And this was a real challenge for me.
How did you see this experience changing them?
Well, we had to move, and so we had to leave behind the life that they knew, not just with him, but their friends and their school and everything they had known. And I now understand that this is fairly common for a lot of families who lose a loved one to incarceration because due to financial issues and other things that where they have to leave the world that they knew behind.
Do your kids maintain a relationship with your ex-husband?
They've really chosen not to. I left that up to them. It was not my place to judge. It was not my place to say whether they did or did not. I told them what he had done, and I left it up to them to make that decision. They've chosen at this point not to really communicate with him. They did initially early on because it was so shocking, but they no longer do.
Now, this has been such a profound experience for you that you went back to school, you got a master's in criminology, and you've also become one of the co-founders of this nonprofit called Empowering Children of Incarcerated Parents. What was it about this experience that made you want to reach out to other people who were experiencing something similar?
Well, there are small groups and nonprofit organizations in various communities, which I now know. But at the beginning, I couldn't locate these groups, and these groups couldn't locate me. There's no hub. There's no place to go where you can say, okay, here's a group here and a group here for group therapy. Here's someone who can help out. Here's someone who's been there. And we really couldn't find that. So that's why we decided to create our book. I asked my older two children, just understanding the natural therapeutic nature of writing, I asked them, write down how you feel. Write down how you felt when he was arrested, how you feel now. Do you tell your friends? Do you not tell your friends? How do you get through each and every challenge that you face? And later on, my business partner and I decided we need to invite other children in similar situations to write their stories. And then we can provide these books for other children so it can be therapy in their hands. So these children don't feel alone. So they realize another child has been through similar circumstances and they made it through. So it's okay. I can make it through as well.
All right. And the book you're talking about is What Did I Do?
Correct.
The other children that you've encountered, they have some things in common, of course. What are some of the things that the feelings that they share?
Stigma, isolation, and turmoil. They're very similar circumstances to when a parent either dies or goes away to the military. But yet those families have very positive community support, whereas a child who has a parent who goes behind bars doesn't have that. And they certainly aren't going to share with peers or teachers or anyone really what has happened to their parent due to stigma. And that leaves them even more isolated than military families.
Well, and before your ex-husband committed this crime, how would you have felt about having your kids play with other kids who had a parent in prison?
I was once the person that was very judgmental, that I am now trying to change everyone else's perspective. We had some children across the street who had a parent behind bars, and I was very leery of having my children play with those children. And I judged them. I judged these children as though they had committed a crime. And now that my children are part of that population, I ask everybody to please not do that. That's a huge problem that we as adults are creating. We're exacerbating the problem by judging children who are in a situation for which they are not guilty.
And speaking of that implied guilt, I mentioned earlier when I was talking with Deborah this cycle of incarceration, and the kids of parents who are incarcerated are at greater risk of becoming incarcerated when they are older themselves. But you write that the expectation of that cycle is unfair.
It is. Really, truly, we need to stop. We today, there are huge problems that really need to be corrected within the judicial system, but those are big and those are going to take a long time. What we as individuals can do today to improve the futures of innocent children who have done nothing wrong is to alter the way in which we treat these children. We need to stop undermining, to stop lowering our expectations for these children, and to understand the unique needs and challenges of this population.
And some of those unique challenges, you mentioned you had to move back to Iowa. You were a well-off family before, and basically you were left homeless by this crime.
We were. And I know that that's one of the huge issues with most people who have a parent behind bars is a financial issue. A lot of times the parent is behind bars many miles away from where the family is living. And oftentimes they don't even have the gas money to go to the prison. And if they do and they waste an entire weekend, perhaps there's a lockdown at the prison and the kids don't get to see the parent. And then they have to wait a long time to be able to see them again. Issues with phone calls and how expensive those can be. I mean, we're really throwing additional problems in the mix with so many financial problems for so many of these children.
I want to bring some more voices into this conversation. Another family that's had to deal with a father in prison. Misty is the founder of the Voices to Be Heard Project, a support group for families and children with an incarcerated loved one. And she's here with her daughter, Deshae, who is 9 years old. Deshae's dad is in prison. Hello, Misty.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. And hello, Deshae.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here. Misty, can you give us a little bit of background? How long has Deshae's dad been in prison?
Deshae's dad's been in prison for about 6 years. Hopefully in the next year he'll be released, and hopefully we could get back to having a relationship for her and her father.
And you no longer have a relationship with him, but you have let Deshae make her own choices about having a relationship with her dad. How have you facilitated that?
Oh, that's correct. It's been kind of stressful. It's hard on me. I've kind of moved on with my life, and that's what we see these families go through is as a family, you kind of move on. You kind of put that in the past, but it's really hard on the kids because it's not their fault. But us as adults want to move on. And so it's been hard on the girls. Deshae, she's my youngest, but I also have a set of twins that are 11, so they're hitting that preteen age, and they kind of, you know, they, like we've mentioned before, you know, they're acting out. I hear a lot about I want to get in trouble so I could go to jail and, you know, things like that that are being said. So it's really hard on the kids to retain that relationship with their father, and especially as Joy mentioned earlier, just to go up and visit, it is a financial problem. I mean, you go up there, it takes you hours to get up there. Gas is expensive. And then when you get in there, there's nothing for these kids to do. They just sit there. And I know there was conversation earlier with Deborah about the Iowa Department of Human Services, about how they do the communication, but that's not in all the facilities. So when you're sitting there having the visitation, there's not much communication going on because you don't really have much to talk about.
We have an email from Jennifer in Des Moines on a very similar subject. She says, my son's father, my ex-husband, was in prison for 2.5 years and is unfortunately going to be going back to prison next month. My son is definitely a daddy's boy and is going to be devastated to be away from his dad again. I'm torn about what to do this time. I told my ex that I wasn't going to do this again. I wasn't going to run up and down the highway to visit, but I know he needs his son and vice versa. I do think that for families and children, the visiting room could be a little more like I remember when I visited my mother, a warm, caring experience. And Misty, it sounds like you're echoing that the visiting room is not a warm place.
It's not child friendly. It's not family friendly to be. And you know, it's not supposed to be like a playground. I understand that. But just to be able to go up there and visit is a challenge. You know, you can't really do much there. Nothing at all, really.
Deshae, how often do you get to see your dad?
Not that much.
Not that much. Do you get to send him emails?
Sometimes.
And he sends you emails too?
Yes.
What's your favorite thing to write to him about?
School.
Yeah, you like to tell him how you're doing in school. And why is it important for you to see him, do you think?
Because I love him.
Yeah, are you excited that he's going to be getting out?
Yes.
I hope you get to see a lot more of him. And I want to return, Joy, to that idea of visiting rooms. I visited the prison in Mitchellville, and they've made a lot of effort to make the visiting room a warmer and friendlier environment there. So clearly, from facility to facility, there are differences. As you talk to families who are trying to maintain these relationships with parents and visit in all of these different visiting rooms, do you have advice that you can give them?
Well, we also work with the Ashcraft Project that provides books to prison inmates and to visitors in the visiting room. But, you know, it's such a challenge, and like has been mentioned several times throughout the program today, they are all different. And so it's not a blanket. It's not just one simple, well, just have this as your expectation, because that's not true in every facility. I mean, you may have a child being patted down. You may have a very stark environment. You may have a better environment in another prison. So it's really a difficulty. They would really have to discuss one-on-one with someone in one of these support groups, the prison that their loved one is in order to address the unique circumstances of that particular prison.
And is that information available? I mean, as we've talked about in previous times on this series, when a family is thrust into the criminal justice system, they don't have a lot of information. Most people don't really have any idea what it's like inside a prison. Are there ways to find out what the visiting room will be like so you can prepare kids?
They are, if you go to one of these groups like Voices to be Heard. Also, Children and Families of Iowa, they have some good programs. And you can go to our website, What Did I Do? It's www.whatdidido.com. And we have resources listed, phone numbers and places to connect with people in the community.
Misty, I can only imagine that there are times when it's hard for you to facilitate this relationship that your ex has with his children, with your children. What keeps you going? Why do you think it's important to make this possible if this is what your kids want?
Because it is possible. We can help this. So we can help the children. We can help the families. It just needs some people working together to make some changes. As Joy mentioned, there's a lot of changes that need to be done, but there's a lot that we could do right now. One of the things that I do encourage is to attend a Voices to be Heard group if you are in Des Moines. The group gathers to support and comfort those who know too well the grief that comes to those left behind. We have guest speakers. We come in. We have support. We have food. We have fellowship. We have art therapy for the children. We get the kids involved with the What Did I Do book. We have a lot of activities for the children and the families. So we're there for them through the whole incarceration, parole, and probation period.
And Joy is one of the founders of this nonprofit. She wrote her book because of her personal experience and not being able to find the support that she felt that she needed. Misty, were you also inspired to found Voices to be Heard because you weren't finding the support that you needed?
No, there was no support out there, none at all. And that's when I partnered up with Child and Family Policy Center back in 2008, and we established the Voices to be Heard group.
What would you like to say to other parents out there who may think, as Joy used to think, that I don't really want my kids to play with the child of someone who's in prison? What do you want all of us to know about your kids?
They're all good kids. Everybody deserves a chance. All the kids deserve a lot of chances and a lot of help. As Joy mentioned, a lot of these kids are going through a grief process that is very similar to somebody who has parents that are going over to the military or somebody that has lost a parent. However, it's looked at a different way. But they're all grieving, and they just need somebody to talk to, and that's where the kids will gather here at the Voices to be Heard group, and we go out on outings and we do things together.
Well, Misty, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
Misty is the founder of Voices to be Heard, and you can find out more information about Voices to be Heard online, of course. And DeShay, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot. And also, Joy DeSomber, thank you to you.
Thank you for having me.
Joy DeSomber is the co-founder of a nonprofit called Empowering Children of Incarcerated Parents. She is also the author of a book called What Did I Do? For children and families who are going through experiences like this one. We've been talking about parents in prison this hour. Talk of Iowa is produced by Emily Woodbury, Dennis Reese, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Technical support today from John Pemble. And of course, we'll be continuing our series on corrections in Iowa coming up today at noon on River to River. With me, the host of River to River, Ben Kiefer. What's coming up at noon today, Ben?
Hi, Charity. Some conversations, by and large, conversations I had on a visit to the Iowa Medical and Classification Center in Coralville, known as Oakdale. I think you played a little bit of that this hour. But our focus at noon is aging and dying in prison. So we'll talk with an offender who actually has accompanied 20 fellow inmates to the end of their lives behind bars.
He's a hospice volunteer in prison.
Who is an offender? He's in prison. He's helping others who are dying in prison. Also, reflections on a man, 74 years old. He spent 11 years in prison on aging and dying in prison. So it'll be interesting conversations at noon. Charity.
Absolutely. And we do have an aging prison population. Although the prison population has been growing, there are people who are spending their entire lives there.
Right. And that's creating a great deal of medical costs. And we'll talk about the costs to the taxpayer for that aging population.
All right, Ben. Thanks a lot. That's coming up at noon on River to River as we continue our series on corrections in Iowa. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'd love to get your feedback. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, we'll talk about our devotion to cats. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.